I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away.
What is up, Wisconsin? Good afternoon, happy Friday, the sun is shining, the world is moving on, and we are here live at the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Brian Kelly, your temporary, very, very temporary host for just a little bit here. Maggie had another engagement, and it turns out that being really good at things means that people want your time a lot, and it kind of messes with your schedule just a touch. She'll be along very, very shortly. I don't know what we should talk about today, though. If only there were only some just topics, maybe some things to say. Let's reminisce a little bit about football. Maybe one of my favorite players growing up was Walter Payton. You know who else I really liked? I mean, I wasn't a fan of, I liked the NBA, but I wasn't really a fan of Shaq, but I really respected him. Shaquille O'Neal also. Do you know what those guys really have in common? The number 34. They wore the number 34. And you know who now is also part of that greatness, who has wore the number 34? Donald Trump. He's got 34 guilty convictions. Congratulations, or guilty verdicts, I should say. And congratulations to him. I mean, he's pushing greatness already. I want to bring you to some sound of Trump yesterday, directly after the trial, talking about how wonderful of a trial and how great the judge was, just to give you a little bit of flavor. Hey, just so you know, while we are hanging out here, we're going to have Charles Franklin, MU Law School pollster. He's pretty darn good and pretty darn accurate. That's why he's been the guy, go-to source for several years as far as what are the people thinking and what are they likely to do. Maggie will be joining with Charles Franklin very shortly. But right now, I'm going to bring you some sound, give you a little flavor of Trump yesterday outside the courthouse.
We will fight for our Constitution. This is long from over.
Long from over, that's true. He's going to fight until, I don't think he's conceded a fight back. I mean, he's probably still fighting something that happened back in 1980 that someone talked to him about. He's still litigating that. Well, no, I was really right when I said this one thing that doesn't matter anymore, and that person's probably dead. Anyway, here's some more Trump.
This was a disgrace. This was a rigged trial by a conflicted judge who was corrupt. It's a rigged trial, a disgrace.
He thought the elections were going to be rigged until he won. He actually said that they were going to be rigged. He said that beforehand. He likes to use the word rigged. Trump is a fan of the word rigged and used it a lot. Let's see here. What did he say back in 2016? This is before he won the election.
The process is rigged. This whole election is being rigged.
Except for until he won. And then it wasn't rigged. In any case, what I can tell you is that we have rigged a wonderful situation here. We have been joined by the wonderful Maggie Dawn. Maggie, how are you today?
Hey, Brian. I'm good. Thanks for your patience and getting us all started this beautiful Friday afternoon.
Well, I've been giving him a little Trump flavor from last night.
Of course. I mean, and why wouldn't you? It's so balanced. Clearly Trump as an institutionalist believes in the rule of law and that we're all, again, equal under the law. Very, very much a man that believes in letting the process play out and supporting the institutions, especially our essential justice system institutions. He very, very a man who knows the moment that he stands in and how much his country needs him to stand up and do the right thing.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Here's the last bit of flavor of that.
This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people.
There was a real verdict by 12 people in Manhattan. But to a degree, this was something that the former president said that I agree with. It will be a question that will be posed and it will ultimately be left up to the people of these United States, which speaking of, it'd be interesting if we had a pollster that just surveyed people to find out if indeed a guilty conviction will impact what they think and how they may vote this fall. Indeed, we have such an expert. Welcome again, Professor Franklin. Thanks so much for being here.
Good to be here.
All right. So Marquette just had a poll out. You asked the question that is on everyone's mind, which is, will the conviction matter? Turns out the answer from a polling perspective is a little bit more complicated than we might think.
Yeah, it does seem to matter, but it's not a huge difference. And different pollsters have come up with different amounts that it might matter. The way we went about it is early in the questionnaire, early in the survey, we asked, who would you vote for, Biden or Trump or someone else, or not vote? And in that first question, Trump led by 4 points. Then late in the questionnaire, we asked about the New York trial, and we said, if it turns out Trump is found guilty, and then we repeated the how would you vote question. And on that second ask with the guilty scenario, Biden led by 4 points. So there was a 3-point improvement for Biden and a 5-point decline for Trump between that first question and the guilty scenario. Incidentally, we did also ask a not guilty scenario, which doesn't matter now, but that showed a boost for Trump. So Our conclusion is that mid single digits of shift is about what we're seeing for the two guilty, not guilty scenarios. But from the overall question at the beginning to the guilty scenario, a shift of about 4 to 5 points for each candidate.
A fairly significant differential change, meaning when you're comparing what the candidates were polling at without a conviction and then with a conviction, that's a pretty big gap, which, again, a lot of the punditry over the last 24 hours has basically landed in the maybe it matters. But what I think the point is here, that even a tiny fractional, even a single digit or two worth of swing in a state like Wisconsin may end up making the difference. Or am I reading the math wrong here, Professor Franklin?
I think we've seen a close race, whether it's state or national polling. Almost all of the polling has been within a 3-point margin, and an awful lot of it's been within a 2-point margin. So I don't think you have to do a lot of math to say that looks like a close race. Trump has consistently led by some amount since October, but it has been as high as almost 4 and as low as a dead even tie. Right now, it's running about a 1-point Trump lead. So if we saw a shift that pulled him down as much as the 4 or 5 points we see in our poll, then that could reverse that lead. Now, remember, there's a big difference between asking a hypothetical in our survey and how voters now react to the real world. 12 jurors, unanimous beyond a reasonable doubt on 34 charges. There's a lot of strength to that if you believe in the jury system. On the other hand, you're seeing a host of Republican elected officials coming out and echoing Trump's line that the charges should never have been brought, that it's a rigged jury or a rigged trial. That emphasis from other Republicans is sending a lot of signals to at least Republican voters around the country of how they can look at this conviction but dismiss it because the process was unfair.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you, kind of along those lines, Professor Franklin, is this. Did your poll or any poll that you may have come across differentiate when it asked the question about if the former president is convicted? Did any of the polls try to get at the very surprise? To me, as a lawyer, I was surprised, frankly, to see unanimity, obviously, that they've not just reached a verdict, but that they unanimously concluded he was guilty across all 34 charges. I had prognosticated some sort of split the baby down the middle sort of thing. And okay, I can see that not moving potential polling numbers quite as much. Did your poll distinguish in any way, or what insights might you give us about the type of verdict that we have here?
Yeah, we did not, and I'm not aware of any polling prior to the decision or the verdicts that asked about split decisions or, you know, a hung jury or those kinds of complications. I'm confident there will be a flurry of polls over the next week to 10 days that dive into this matter of how do you feel about the jury? Do you trust the jury even if you don't trust the prosecutor or say the case shouldn't have been brought? That will be a counter argument to the points Trump and his allies are trying to make to discredit the whole process. And I think again, 12 jurors, unanimous across 34 charges, beyond a reasonable doubt. That is pretty powerful. Now, with Trump, so much of this is baked in. I don't think that the trial produced stunning new information that we had not heard over the last 4+ years about his relationship with Stormy Daniels and the hush money and that sort of stuff. You know, details like the checks that he signed, maybe that was new news to people. But there is an argument that this is baked into people's views of Trump. And if knowing what they know about Trump, they nevertheless support him and think he'd be a good president again, then I'm not sure that this decision, even by a jury of 12 people, is likely to change that very much. What I will be looking for in the next weeks is whether that 20% of Republican primary voters who have continued to vote against Trump in primaries, do they become even more willing to cross over for Joe Biden because they haven't been very willing before? On the other hand, with all the Republican messaging going on, is it possible that they get rallied behind Trump as legislators who aren't known as especially friendly to Trump are nevertheless supporting him today and echoing the idea that the charges shouldn't have been brought? Even Mitch McConnell came out with that today, and he's not been a close friend of Trump in the last few years.
Certainly has found his way to bend a knee and endorse the man. However, my guest, this first segment of this very special Friday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show, Marquette Holster and law professor Charles Franken. Thanks for being here, Charles. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we come back, I'm going to dig in more on the verdict. I want to hear from you all. What do you think? 855-75-CIVIC. It's your turn to sound off. 855-752-4842. And of course, I'll give you a little what I think about it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
We better be careful because that election is going to be rigged. And I hope the Republicans are watching closely or it's going to be taken away from
us. You're out of order. You're out of order.
Hey. Hey. Give them what they want. Guilty. At least 12 of them wanted to say guilty, and they did. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the little bit of news that happened in the last 24 hours. Not much, just a former president for the first time in our nation's history becoming a convicted felon, not once, not twice, but 34 times over. Of course, there will be an appeal, but the fact will ever and always remain that Donald Trump has been convicted of felonies. He cannot pardon himself. Saw some questioning going on about that because these are state charges. I want to do a little recap of what the charges are. First, my hat's off to my good friend, Brian Kelly. Thanks for kicking us off today, Brian.
Hey, no problem.
Very much appreciated.
Ready to rock
anytime.
I heard
Peyton Manning. Where's number 34? I like that.
No, Walter Payton.
Walter Payton.
Different Payton.
There we go. Can't even get the recollection correct.
Much different character as well, but that's a completely different road. But if you want to look at someone who's also covered up some stuff that they just should have said I did wrong, look no further than Peyton Manning.
Let's just refresh our recollections, hopefully correctly here. In 2017, Michael Cohen and Alan Weisselberg, an executive, basically the CFO, the chief financial officer at the Trump Organization, reached an agreement about how Cohen would be repaid for the $130,000 that Cohen paid, as directed by Trump, to Stormy Daniels to catch her story about her affair with Trump and kill it so that it didn't see the light of day leading up to the election in fall of 2026. Now, interesting enough, as came out in the trial, Weisselberg detailed the calculations in handwritten notes, which were shown to the jury. That's one of my favorite things. And his notes break down, well, Cohen's going to get the $130,000 for the Daniels payment, plus $50,000 for a company that did some other tech work unrelated to work for the Trump campaign. And then he tacked on an extra 60 G's as a bonus for Michael Cohen, because good work here. The total worked out to about $420,000. And they actually have Weisselberg doing the math, basically on the back of a steel napkin, if you will. So each of the 34 charges against Donald Trump related to a check, an invoice, and a voucher that was created to reimburse Cohen. And there was this chart that the prosecution showed to jurors numerous times, and it was separated into categories: the invoices, the vouchers, and the checks. There was basically one more voucher than invoice or check. So you had 11 invoices, 12 vouchers, and 12 checks. That all totaled up to be the 34 counts. And the way the prosecution put them together, they also put it on a timeline in 2017. That kind, when you have the documents, as the kids say, when you have the receipts, and not just a receipt, you have three receipts per payment, in effect, the check itself, the invoice, and the voucher, it's a little hard to deny what happened. Now, the interesting thing is that under New York law, the falsification of the business record itself wouldn't be a crime unless you did it intentionally to defraud. And in order to make it a felony, you have to you mean to make the false record, you mean to do it to cover something up, to make something seem that it is what it is not, right? That's the intent to defraud. You actually have to do that in order to commit another crime or aid or conceal another crime. So there's three pieces that have to be concluded. It's a false record. Yes. You intended it to be false in order to cover something up. Yes. And you intended it to be false to cover something up so that you could commit a different sort of crime. You got it? That's why it got a little complicated here. And in Trump's case, the other crime was a violation of New York election law that makes it illegal for any two or more persons to conspire to promote or prevent the election of any person to a public office by unlawful means. All right, so he wanted to hide things from the public so that he could get elected president. And to do so, he falsified business records, and he intended the falsification of the business records to help him get elected. That's the felony. And again, multiple transactions, each with an invoice, a voucher, and the actual check payment. I'll be honest with you, the testimony of Michael Cohen, the testimony of Stormy Daniels, interesting. But I think it was the testimony of David Pecker, who has been Trump's longtime friend, who owned AMI, the company that owns the National Enquirer. David Pecker, whom the prosecution used to kick off the prosecution, I believe, in reviewing a lot of the evidence, that the clarity of the documents themselves, again, for each and every payment, the invoice, the check, and the voucher, that the clarity of the documents themselves, coupled with Alan Weisselberg's notes showing the repayment to Michael Cohen, as well as the absolutely crystal clear testimony of David Pecker, who does not have a bone to pick with Donald Trump, and in many instances could reasonably claim to still be his friend, that is what led to the convictions. Because David Pecker testified in no uncertain terms, yes, the whole point here was to kill this story. And they were concerned about it after the Access Hollywood tape. There were only weeks to go in the election. That's all the jury needed. Frankly, I think the prosecution could have done it with just those things, the documents themselves and the testimony of David Pecker. At the end of the day, one of the questions that I'm left with is, let's think about all of the people that Donald Trump has trashed related to this case. Stormy Daniels, check. Michael Cohen, check. The judge, check. The judge's clerk, check. The judge's family, check. The judge's clerk's family, check. The entire justice system as a whole, check, 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 check. Who's not on that list, who I just described as having probably the most impactful testimony in the case? Brian, it's not a trick question. Who is he not trashed in the press during the case?
David Pecker.
Ding, 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 ding. You too get $420,000. I'm just kidding. One has to ask oneself, why is Donald Trump not trashing David Pecker, the prosecution's star witness? Well, this is complete and utter speculation. Might it be because David Pecker might have caught and killed a few other stories?
Ding, 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 ding.
Honestly, it's weird. He has trashed the prosecutors, his former lawyers, every single person that has touched this case in some way, shape, or form. Witnesses, the judges, the clerks, the court staff, the prosecutors, everyone except for David Pecker. Kind of makes you go, I'm curious, what do you all make of this? Is it going to make a difference in Wisconsin? We'll talk about some of the polling. We'll continue to dig deep. I told you I would try to explain it all and give you my two cents. We're going to continue to do that this afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Give us a call or a text, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be back with more after this, your farm update, which is next.
Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm.
Former MAGA president is so vain. Isn't he? I mean, it's one of the many problems, at least. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Right? It was just the vanity. Huh. Okay, we've explained the convictions, I think, as straightforwardly as we can. Again, for each payment, three different documents. David Pecker's testimony, I think, was the linchpin. My good friend Jeff, listening out of Shorewood, pointing out that Stormy Daniels' testimony was also essential in that she could directly testify to the sex itself, which was, of course, the thing that set all of this in motion. Good point, Jeff. I'll take that point. The other thing that strikes me, and then we're going to go to the phones. I want to hear what everybody's got to say about this. It's Friday. Let's get it up off our chests. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. When we look at the criminal charges facing Donald Trump and where we stand today as a country, there is an argument to be made that we aren't here. We aren't having this discussion. Had Donald Trump simply followed the law back in 2016 on this very case, had he not engaged in the falsification of business records, if he hadn't tried to collude to catch and kill the story, had he allowed the information about him relevant, very relevant information, especially on the heels of the Access Hollywood tape, we know that suburban college-educated white women were a key demographic in Donald Trump's 2016 win. It is reasonable to claim, or at least to argue the point, that had this information come out, there would have been no Donald Trump as president. And if there had never been a Donald Trump as president, he wouldn't have had the opportunity to foment an insurrection on January 6th. The Jack Smith, Washington, D.C. case would not be proceeding, nor would the Georgia RICO case be proceeding. And had he never been president, he couldn't have stolen our super secret spy secrets and taken them to his gilded bathroom for anyone to see at Mar-a-Lago, and the Florida documents case would not exist either. So I've never wanted to reduce the New York case to just hush money or business documents. What it was voter manipulation. That was election fraud. Election fraud that very well could have mattered, and it would have changed the course of history had this man simply followed the law. That sort of robbing the American people of the relevant information which we are owed in order to adjudge the candidates for the highest office in the land, the leader of the free world, that's what we should indict this president, former president, over and over again for. I worry less about the business documents. I worry about the intent behind the entire scheme. Because here we are again. We're going to talk about some of what the flip-flopping Republicans have said, the gutless GOP, the bending of the knee again and again, now in the face of 12 regular people who have decided that this man is guilty not just once, but 34 times. Again, I'll make this other comment that we're going to go to the phones. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Here's my last observation. It is very clear that all the Republicans got a talking point memo because you see the words kangaroo court and sham over and over and over again. It's in everybody's statements.
Oh, Van Orden said banana republic.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one. Banana republics.
Mm-hmm. So they got talking points, but here's what the talking points memo didn't say. It doesn't deny that he had sex with Stormy Daniels. It doesn't deny that he's a cheater. It doesn't deny that he's a liar. It doesn't deny that the documents were falsified. It's not a claim of innocence. The only one that says I'm innocent is Donald Trump. They don't argue about the actual facts of the matter. And they attack all sorts of folks involved in the judicial system. But I have yet to see any statement that directly attacks the 12 average New Yorkers, Donald Trump's peers, who sat in a jury box and deliberated and unanimously concluded the man is guilty, 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 guilty. I lose count. It's those 12 Americans that the Republicans should be most ashamed of throwing under the bus. Not a single one of us sat in that jury box, heard every bit of evidence as it was presented in court. Not a single one of us then went into a jury room with people who undoubtedly didn't all agree to begin with. Not a single one of us was there when they crafted the questions and the request to review evidence, to review jury instructions that those 12 average Americans considered. We should be angry on their behalf. When they tear down the courts, when they tear down the justice system, when they say it's rigged, when they say it's a sham, when they say it's a banana republic or a kangaroo court, they're spitting in the face of each and every one of those Americans. And those Americans are you and me and our neighbors and our friends. And to that, I say, disagree with the outcome, argue over the evidence, which they don't do, by the way. But don't you dare spit in the faces of those 12 average Americans who sat there and did their duty. Dave from Mequon, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Oh,
Dave, you there?
Really quickly, yeah, can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, sorry. Really quickly, what I find very interesting is this. So if you remember back in 2016, the FCC fined, you know, the Clinton campaign $8,000 and the DNC $105,000. And what's interesting in this situation, the FEC declined to even fine Trump over any payments whatsoever. And so I find that kind of interesting from the standpoint. And the reason why the FCC fined the Clinton campaign was that, if you remember back in 2016, It came out that, you know, the Hillary Clinton campaign, they secretly paid more than $1 million to foreign spies to create entire fictions out of a
That's never been proven. I'll just say this very briefly, Dave, about the Federal Elections Commission. It is one, if not the, it is the one of the top three weakest enforcement bodies in the entirety of the federal system. Every legal scholar, whether conservative or liberal, will tell you that. They are after the fact agencies. And what you didn't have here was the Clinton campaign committing additional state level felonies. That's the difference. Thanks, Dave. Next up, Matt from Johnson Creek. What do you have to say, Matt?
Hi, Maggie. Kind of to your defense of the jury, you know, you hear a lot about, like, well, he was never going to get a fair trial in New York. And it's true that Biden did win New York, like city, state, basically on an average of 4-1, you know, 25% to 75%. But that still then means that they should have been able to find at least one, if not three, sympathetic jurors. And they couldn't even find that, right? Like, unless, and I realize that Trump's campaign or Trump's attorneys are terrible and they may have botched voir dire that badly. But just statistically speaking, if you pull 12 and you lose even at a 3-1, 4-1 ratio, you should have been able to pull some jurors that would have, you know, been able to see it just for their guy. And they couldn't even do that.
Yeah, that is the point.
Maggie, correct me if I'm wrong. Do they pull them from Manhattan?
They pull them from New York County. So it can be any of the boroughs that.
Oh, I was going to say, if they were pulled from Manhattan, which is what they call them, the Wall Street bros, of which several are my uncles.
There's lots of conservatives.
They're not just conservatives, people that say things that are very bad just to shock people, just to show how important and powerful they are. They talk just like Trump. And I'm pretty sure if any one of them was on the trial, they'd be like, I don't know. I don't like the guy.
I used to live in New York. Not everybody I interacted with was a Democrat or a liberal. It has some of the wealthiest zip codes in the United States. The entire financial industry is basically headquartered in the United States there. Those people are making billions off the Trump tax cuts. Again, the point is not that jurors come from places that vote for one party or the other in election cycles. That's everywhere in the gosh darn country, right? Like, elections have outcomes. That cannot mean in our system that we can't field a jury. That's what voir dire is for. It's the Latin term that means asking questions of the jurors. And they used a very rigorous process to do that. John from Hubertus, still upset about the choice for president, a felon or Joe Biden. He's saying that shows the Democrats don't have the right candidate. This is one of the questions, right? The question is, should Democrats lean into the fact that Trump's now a convicted felon and sort of talk about it all the time? I think they should. But, you know, John from Hubertus, thanks for texting. I'll just say this. Our lives are filled with imperfect choices. Politics is filled with imperfect choices. I've never voted for a candidate that checked every one of my boxes on policies or values. But what I do as an adult, what I do as a citizen, is research, and I vote for the candidate that most closely aligns with the policies and values that are most important to me. The world is not a perfect place. We don't, and we've never had perfect candidates. We all have to be adults and realize the moment that we're in and vote for democracy and vote for the rule of law. That's a vote for Joe Biden, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing is, like, people have amnesia from when the candidate is running to when the person is the president or in office, because things that they say on the trail aren't reality. Those are hypotheticals. When you get in the actual office, the actual job, you just need someone who's going to look at the facts and go, I can make a rational decision and back it up based on facts. And Trump isn't that guy for me. That's why I'm not doing it with him. That's it.
Because facts don't enter. He doesn't listen to advisors. He doesn't listen to experts. He doesn't have any desire to actually understand the issues that he needs to decide as a president. That's what, I mean, he's a rapist. He's a fraudster. He doesn't pay contractors. He's not a good person. I don't like his policies. But even if I did, a president who does not wish to understand the issues that he must decide is not ever going to be someone that I vote for. Angie from Monroe pointing out on the text line, very important point. Trump's a felon. He may not be able to travel as much or go to countries. He may not be able to vote for himself as a convicted felon. Yeah, by the way, on the travel point, what he'll, in my opinion, I don't think he's going to get any jail or prison time. I think there'll be some sort of supervised release, which is going to require him to report in. There'll be a pre-sentence investigation report written about him, his likelihood of committing the crime again. You can be sentenced in part to deter both the defendant who has been convicted as well as others from committing the crime. We'll see about that. But I think short of him spending any time in jail, whatever his conditions of confinement will permit him to travel to continue to campaign. If you are on the phone, stay there. 855-752-4842. We're going to do this the whole show because it's so important. And don't worry, I'm going to get to more sound of those gutless GOP flip-floppers. I wonder what they're all thinking now. We'll go to the text lines as well. My name's Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It has been a historic 24 hours. We're going to continue to dig in. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
I said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her. You know?
What a guilty verdict. I sang this in grade school. I don't think it went so well. Don't worry, I won't regale you with my vocal stylings this afternoon.
This is Flashdance.
Oh yeah.
You know, I worked with Jennifer Beals once.
Did you?
Sat in a room next to her.
Is she as nice in person as she seems?
Seems totally fine. We actually just couldn't talk. I sat next to her but couldn't talk because the scene going on in the next room was happening. But she seemed pretty cool. It was just pretty interesting to be like, yeah, I grew up watching you. You're sitting next to me now.
Yeah, huh. No kidding.
All right, well, cool. I'm going to read my book.
That's Brian Kelly. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the first time in American history that a former president has been convicted of a felony, not once, but 34 times. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Some feedback and thoughts from our text lines. Let's see here. Where to start? Lots of folks weighing in here. Daddy-O from Windsor. Welcome, Daddy-O. Thanks for listening and texting. Says, loving the show today. Great theory about Pecker. Really appreciate the way that you simplified the logic behind the convictions. Thank you very much. Again, I think it's a little weird that Donald Trump hasn't attacked David Pecker, the guy with all the dirt. Wonder why that might be. Steve from Milwaukee saying, I knew David Pecker would be the dagger, even though they put all the hype on Cohen. Agreed, Steve. He also asked, why does the judge need a whole month to give out the sentence? The judicial system is dumb. Let me tell you why it takes a whole month. After the conviction, there is a process of effectively investigating the defendant. Again, that report is then provided to the defense counsel, the prosecution, as well as the judge. It takes a while to compile that. The lawyers can then make arguments about how long the sentence should be. There may even be briefing around that. So again, it does take a bit. A month, candidly speaking, is pretty decent. I have seen trials where the sentencing doesn't happen for 3 months to 6 months. So actually, moving relatively quickly, but I hear your frustration. Annie from Watertown giving love to Fancy Brian. I'm excited to hear him every day too, Annie. Thanks for that Matt from Germantown. So does the gag order apply anymore, or can Trump openly attack jurors and the judge now? Good question, Matt. It still applies. The case is not yet concluded. One of the things that I would think as Trump's lawyer would be incredibly infuriating is the fact that he keeps attacking the system and attacking the judge. He did so immediately following the trial yesterday. Brian, I know you've got some sound. If you can find where he talks about the rigged system, we can listen to it again. But yeah, he keeps attacking this system. He's going to get sentenced by this judge. Now, I don't think there's been any indications from Judge Mershon that he's taking any of this personally. I think the judge has bent over backwards to be very even-handed in this matter. Of course, it will be appealed. There may be a couple of rulings that might have some weaknesses, but I think on balance, this case will survive appeal. Jeff from Shorewood saying, tell me about politically leaning counties and potential juries. Ozaukee County is crazy right-leaning. I've received, Jeff is a lawyer, literally many mixed verdicts on my trials up there. And even left-leaning Milwaukee County is no guarantee that you would get a defendant-sympathetic jury, 100%. Sam from Milwaukee, sucker punch me with the Trump Ivanka quote. Yes, indeed, Sam, I appreciate that. Let's go to the phones. Joe from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, hey, Maggie, thanks for everything here. And I have four quick points that I'd love your reaction to. Number one is the line that has been touted by the Republicans that this case never should have been brought. Okay, my understanding is that that it was brought before a grand jury, and it was a grand jury that decided that this goes to trial. Ordinary people deciding there's enough stinky here that we need to look at this and decide whether there's more to it and that the person is guilty or not guilty. So ordinary Americans, ordinary New Yorkers looking at this and saying it looks bad, we should go forward. How else would we decide whether cases are brought forward? Should we have a national poll? Everybody can vote on whether this happens or not.
What is that smell?
Mr. Franklin, he says a line, and I know other people have been saying it, so I don't mean to dump on him too much, but the line is, if you believe in the jury system, you'll think one way or the other. What other system do we have besides a jury system? You know, are we going to do mob lynching, or is that how we're going to decide things? This is the system we have, a jury system. Not everybody's going to like every jury comes up with. I've seen systems or times when I've not been happy with the outcome. So what? This is what we have. The last thing that I wanted to ask is that you had mentioned that you're quite sure that, or you feel confident about saying that it's unlikely that Trump would get jail. And I wanted to go into that a little bit more, Maggie. This is a guy who is not contrite. This is a guy who is not, by any stretch of the imagination, said, I've learned my lesson. I'm sorry. You know, I shouldn't have said. Instead, he comes out with lines like, this whole thing is rigged. The gag orders, the numerous gag orders against him that were really, I mean, those are scary. Those jurors still don't know what's going to happen in their lives if they served on this jury. If you are in a situation where after all of this, 34 felony convictions, what comes out of this is that this man is put in a situation where he just gets probation and has to pay fines. Those fines are what $5,000 per charge? What is that?
Yes.
That would be, again, a two-tiered system of justice telling us again in the most blatant, in-your-face way that rich people can get away with it. So I love your reactions to this. Thanks, Maggie.
Thank you, Joe. I love it when the callers do the show better than even I can. Very impressed with your questions and the thoughtfulness, Joe. I appreciate it. Please keep listening. First is the grand jury. There's a saying amongst prosecutors that grand juries will indict a ham sandwich. It's a very one-sided presentation of cases before grand juries. And yet, I totally concur with your second point. And that is, this is our system. This is what we have to determine guilt or not guilt. Not guilt. And I say it in that awkward way because the other option is an innocence. It simply has the prosecution prove their case on each of the charges beyond a reasonable doubt. And 12 average Americans decided that the prosecution, the state of New York, had. I'll take up Joe's other points, and we'll continue to go to the phones. 855-757-855-752-4842. I'll give you more of my takes on the other side of the top of the hour. You've got news, weather, and sports up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
My daughter, Ivanka.
Yeah.
She's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body.
Yeah, she's hot.
Who's better?